We next have William Rogers, professor at the School of Law here at the University of Washington. And thank you for coming. And
thank you.
Flash the cards.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see everybody. I've been coming to these conferences for 21 years. And I have to say, they're completely inspiring. So, and I guess my message, principal message today is that the law hasn't met the inspirational challenge that the science has presented over the years. Thank you, by the way, for that stormwater letter you wrote. That caused a minor storm on the political and legal front. A couple of points about law before we get going. It's not on the same trajectory of progress and increased knowledge as most of you strive towards. Law has a lot of built-in momentum. The way it was is the way it will be. So you have the old problem of the elephant learning to fly after many years. You also have the phenomena of postponement. So a 50-year habitat conservation plan is perfection in law. That is, you will never live to see the consequences. There'll be no empirical study of the outcome. The other thing that happens in law is duplication. You see, if it works once, do it again. And if it succeeds once, do it again. Get the credit many times over, and all you do is increase transaction costs and make the situation impossible. Now with that, I've got there's another good side of law, and this is my basic point today. This is a tremendous moment in time that we have here. Climate change, shared strategy, Puget Sound Partnership, Puget Sound Action Team. And I don't believe that our vision is poor, our knowledge is weak, our science is bad, our funds are short, our regrets are deep, or our laws are inadequate. The fact is, law can change very quickly and very dramatically, and that's what you have to have happen. It has to change dramatically and sweepingly. So let me review a few things. The governor has urged waters that are fishable, swimmable, and diggable by the year 2020. Well, you know, I'm old enough to remember the old Clean Water Act. In fact, I wrote it, parts of it, in 1972, and we had an interim goal of fishable, swimmable waters. They were to be achieved by July 1, 1983. Well, you fooled me once with that, but I don't think you can fool me again. But anyhow, this is what we're offered. And then we have Puget Sound. We're told we must accelerate control and cleanup of toxic pollution. Well, I remember again a statement of policy in 1972, Clean Water Act, not only for the Puget Sound, the entire United States, discharge of toxic pollutants and toxic amounts should be prohibited. That's a statement of goals. You say it's impossible. Well, the PCBs law is a failure, but the fact is you can tax PCBs, you could do it tomorrow. Governor says we must substantially increase compliance with our existing laws that protect habitat, water quality, and stream flows. Non-enforcement, a new problem. Did you notice, by the way, that the violation of the cruise ship, they were improperly assessed a penalty, but they paid it anyhow out of their goodness and charity? And perhaps recognition of ineffective enforcement that is endemic. By the way, let me take you back on enforcement. There's the first stream obstruction law. I like that, 1848. Here's another one, Territory of Washington Code, 1881. Don't build a dam, don't obstruct fishways. Very clear, very well established. Got modified, of course, when the Elwha Dam came in. The hydraulics law, you all know that, and you all work with it, but you haven't seen it in its original form. I take you back to 1949. Any person who desires to construct any project that will use, divert, obstruct, or change the natural flow or bed of any river or stream shall submit complete plans and specifications for the proper protection of fish life and secure the written approval of the authorities before commencing construction and work thereon. empty dreams, these laws. I hope a number of you have on your shelf. This is a great study. This was done by the old Washington Department of Fisheries in 1974. And they did a survey of the fish populations in each stream, environmental conditions, assessment, and trends. And then they had a basic comment on non-enforcement. A recurring problem is the attitude of the local courts when the department attempts to prosecute a hydraulic violation. Convictions are rarely obtained, and when favorable judgments do occur, the penalties are usually so low that they provide little, if any, deterrent to future violations. See, that was 1974, so that's 32 years. I mean, how long can you ride this, let's improve enforcement? I know how to improve enforcement. You give a variety of people the power to do this enforcement, and you take it away from the ones who aren't doing the enforcement. This is simple. It could be done in an afternoon. But, of course, we need further studies. This is one done in March 2000 by the Bullitt Foundation. The Hydraulics Act is rarely enforced. Much of the public does not even know it exists. And government itself has violated the law thousands of times. Mitigation projects don't happen. These problems, the thing about law, you can overcome these problems instantly in an afternoon. Really, it can be done. Now, there is some reluctance to do these sorts of things, but non-enforcement can be fixed. Let me talk about collaboration. Puget Sound Partnership reminds us that the history of collaboration in natural resources in Washington is nationally known. So it is. And I think there have been some wonderful achievements in collaboration. But the fact is, let me just tell you a story. I feel like it's a secret. Nobody knows. But let me tell you about it. The old case of fish blocking culverts. This is a problem. And by the way, the Washington State Legislature, this is not the Indian tribe speaking here, this is the Washington State Legislature. There were over 2,000 barriers to fish passage at road crossings throughout the state. These barriers block fish access to as much as 3,000 miles of freshwater spawning and rearing habitat. That's the legislation in more elaborate form. The tribes challenged this 6 years ago. They filed a so-called culverts case. It's the old extension of U.S. v. Washington, the Bolt case. Those are their allegations. They've been supported by the United States throughout. And let me tell you what happened. This case was argued 2 weeks ago, right as we speak. What an opportunity. The treaty right of taking fish, it is argued, requires some assistance to those fish in getting upstream. What an opportunity. What a tremendous role for these consensus groups to jump in and say, let's get on this. This can happen. This is an opportunity for the region. But the governor didn't file a supporting brief, and the Puget Sound Partnership didn't file a supporting brief, and the legislators weren't in there. There was a brief filed by the Washington Association of Counties, and here's what the counties say. Tribes are seeking to force the state, and presumably later the counties, to immediately repair all fish-blocking culverts. This is the subversion that they're seeking. Absent specific language in the treaties, say these counties, speaking through their trade association, neither the state nor the counties can be found to have a duty to immediately return every culvert to a condition that allows for the same flow of fish as existed prior to the erection of the culvert. They're opposed to this innovation. State of Washington, they're opposed to this innovation. Washington, as state, has opposed the tribal initiatives for the last 120 years. Got a book outside telling you some of the details. And it could be otherwise, but these briefs, they might as well have been written in the 19th century, completely opposed to this attempt to improve the culverts. The potential scope of the rights sought by the tribes cannot be underestimated. I live over here, and I wanted to show you what the potential scope of this right would look like. It might restrict your property a little bit. It would require use of your property and direct it towards habitat improvement, fish access, and so on. Now, in this particular example, they're talking settlement now. They've been talking settlement for 6 years. This should happen. In the next 60 days, you'll see whether it does happen. But there's no particular interest or discussion publicly. The legislature could instruct this attorney general to settle a case forthwith and to embrace this prospect of removing culverts that obstruct fish runs. A number of problems have undone the hydraulics law, 2005. By the way, on consensus, NOAA's technical review of the recovery plan assumed that the various plans would be implemented and did not explore the likelihood that they would not. That's how consensus works. It's going to happen for sure. But, of course, it's not a realistic assumption. And a lot of the people participating in the consensus, they feel that they're privileged to defect, as they have in the culvert case and otherwise, whenever it's convenient. One other point about momentum and where these funds come from. You know, your highway gas tax that sends the money to the gas tax in the Department of Transportation, that was enacted by voters in 1944. It set up this highway trust fund, and it's time for that money to be diverted from road building to the consequences of road building, of which culverts are most conspicuous. But there cannot be, the way the world is constructed today, there cannot be mention of this, and I certainly haven't heard a mention of this. Now, I want to conclude by just telling you how easy it is to do these things through law if there's a desire to do it. And there are about 20 changes that I'd make in law, that I'd implement in law, that I've heard recommended in a number of conferences like this. But let me just give you an example, and this is not realistic, but I want to just tell you it's certainly possible in law. Can you break the trust fund? Sure you can, by law. And that money, that gas tax money, can raise billions of dollars for the restoration of Puget Sound. PCB regulation has failed. But the fact is you don't quit. You can tax releases of PCBs, raise a lot of money that way, then use it in cleanup purposes. They say I-5 and Burlington Northern are just a matter of history. No, the streams are long gone. Well, the fact is, in natural resource damages, you can go back and revisit history. And if you eradicated a stream 50 or 60 years ago under laws like Superfund, that doesn't matter. We can get an accounting for that. Expired NPDES permits, contaminated shellfish beds, fish advisories, that's another one. What about these fish advisories? Don't eat the fish. Meanwhile, we'll think about making it possible making possible to have fish that you're supposed to eat. Now, I came here in my last minute, and I don't want to. I think I have sounded sulky. I don't mean that at all. I want you to recognize the wonderful work that you've done and the dreams you have, and the future we all anticipate. It does need law to boost it along. And law, at least in theory, can move very, very quickly. So you don't have to struggle with incremental changes. You can have these dramatic and effective changes. So we got a little law improvement to do, and then we'll be on the same page. Thank you. Questions? Yes?
I, like a few other faces I recognize in this audience, have at times engaged in the rather depressing endeavor of trying to stop or alter the inappropriate development of the landscape. And inevitably, what we run into is a little thing in CEQA called DNS, a declaration of non-significance, saying that that particular development has no significant impact on the resource. When we know that at the watershed scale, it does. And I would like to know how we can get to a point where we can make that point heard. The declaration of non-significance at that particular site does have impacts off that site, and so we can turn that around to meaning that the declaration of non-significance does mean a significant environmental impact at the watershed scale.
Thank you. You just have to keep trying. By the way, SEPA was a copy of NEPA. No question about it. The declaration of non-significance then comes in as a defensive strategy. You have to recognize law is always move, countermove, countermove, countermove. And if the countermoves stop, then the law ends up at something like this, as you say, a dead-end DNS. All I can say is you have to keep trying, and it's not necessarily a defeat when a law decision-maker tells you no, because you've learned that's a no. And then you can take that no to the legislature and you say, you know, there's no relief for us in the courts here. This has to be changed. So I guess my message on law, look at the Exxon Valdez oil spill, right? Alaska Native's been fighting that for 20 years. They had a reopener. We'll come back and reconsider this question. Well, the science has changed dramatically on whether that oil is still there after 15 or 20 years. So you got to keep trying. That's my short answer, I think. Yes, sir. Ma'am?
Regarding your mention of the Exxon Valdez, that's a really good example of how money can delay justice. Do you have any comments on how communities can get their settlement money out of that $1 billion profit
maybe last quarter? Question on can you get the money out of Exxon? Let me give you a short answer to that. Again, you have to keep trying. Just so everybody understands this side of it, $5 billion punitive damage award was assessed against Exxon in 1994. Why $5 billion? Because those were the estimated profits in the years preceding. Since then, the $5 billion has been to the Ninth Circuit once, twice, three times. No one has collected a dime. It's now been remanded. The latest figure is $2.5 billion. All I can say is the law is very heavy with transaction costs. And very frequently, even something like this Puget Sound Partnership, if you just put atop the same old structure and change the rules ever so slightly, you have created tremendous transaction costs. So you can go through the same process over and over and over again. I don't know. I can't tell you. I guess a good percentage of those people have passed away. So the law is vulnerable to these movements and counter-movements, but it's also vulnerable to being kidnapped and directed in the public interest.
So whatever is your money?
The Ninth Circuit just set it at $2.5 billion. You might see your money. Well, Exxon, if they try to take it to the Supreme Court and that fails, you might see your money within a year. Sorry about that. Thank you. Thanks.